Native Solar's energy experts will design and install energy-producing, money-saving solar panels on your home or business that will decrease your electricity bills while increasing the value of your property and the quality of your life. Take your power back at nativesolar.com.
Hi, this is David J. Knapp, and you're listening to the Weird Homes Podcast. Have you ever walked through your neighborhood, taken a look at a strange or weird home, and wondered, who lives there? What's inside of that home? Well, I think as human beings, we've all have done that. And that's what this podcast is all about, is to explore the weird and strange world of the people who live in those homes. So, everybody, this is David J. Neff of the Weird Homes Podcast, and I'm also one of the founders of the Weird Homes Tour with my wife, Shelly Neff, who's the founder. And today we're interviewing one of our amazing homeowners, Kathy. Kathy is an author, a photographer, an artist in her own right, and is often rumored to be the inspiration for a very popular TV character that we'll get to later. So, Kathy, thanks for joining us today. How are you doing?
Great. Loving the weather. Allergies acting up a little, but...
Well, you sound good. I think we'll have a great interview today. So, Kathy, tell me a little bit about... Gosh, if I take it back and I think of your home, and I think of your home as like a collection of collections of all this very interesting art, artifacts, things that have these historical significance, and then I think stuff that you just find... super interesting and fun. So before we get into kind of describing your house and talking about it, talk to me just about kind of art you like or inspirations in your life or kind of leading up to when you first started maybe collecting. I think I'd love to hear that kind of spark of creativity that maybe you first had.
My big light bulb moment would have been after growing up in Orange County, which was very conservative, and getting accepted into the L.A. branch of Parsons School of Design, I moved out to Los Angeles at 18, and all of a sudden, like, started meeting all these artists and going into their homes, and they just had collectives and stuff and nesting, and everywhere you looked was amazing artwork and inspiration and trinkets and sparklies and scary stuff, and I knew I was home. And so that's kind of where the germination of the love began. Some of my favorite photographers kind of fall into the same thing. Joel Peter Witkin is really amazing. He shoots a lot of dead people, body parts out of Mexico City. He has a lot of hermaphrodites that he likes to photograph, doing very strange things with body parts. His work's amazing. It's very dark. Kind of all ties into my crime scene background, my coroner's office background. Getting to that from art was... kind of an interesting, strange process.
So tell me about that apartment in L.A. You're at Parsons, you're starting to go and visit all these people, and I guess that maybe gave you more permission to do something interesting in your own home. It sounds like you were saying it was pretty conservative, but now you're out on your own and you have this apartment. So how did you start to think about that from a creativity standpoint?
We definitely drew inspiration from the artists that we were studying in school and going to galleries and seeing other artists' apartments. And we were all broke, of course, and just finding things on the street, a lot of street art that we would create from that. And being of, you know, a creative background, pretty much anything you could get a hold of, you could turn into an art piece and make it something really cool to hang. And so that's kind of how, you know, very rudimentary beginnings, just painting found objects and whatnot, a lot of bones. We loved bones. And kind of went in with the neighborhood, you know, with the Tate, not Tate, the LaBianca family. And there was a convent down the street and just lots of good. The Hillside Strangler lived about 3 miles down the road. And it's an interesting neighborhood. So from that, while I was in art school, I started transferring out. I originally was in fine arts, communication, design, and illustration. And decided I liked photography better. I wanted to do photo documentary and photojournalism and document all these crazy things that we were encountering while creating our art and exploring the underbelly of L.A. and just fell in love with the unusual. And that kind of evolved into my senior thesis where I was documenting gang members and drug dealers in L.A. and all of a sudden realized that wasn't so smart. And so I hooked up with LAPD.
Oh, wow.
They graciously took me in and said, yes, you can follow us around doing these task forces, narcotics, vice squad, DUI, which DWI here. So I got to follow them around. Rodney King went down during my senior thesis. So I got to see what happened before and after.
Wow.
The impact of that, which changed police departments around the world.
Right.
There's no one that wasn't affected by that case.
Right.
So that was really interesting, and the riots and all of that. And it all kind of formed my ground beginning of being an artist and a photographer and a documentary. And so my love from there, I guess it kind of naturally grew into investigation because of all this crazy stuff that I was seeing and wanting to share and explore. And I eventually started studying forensics and ended up training at the county coroner's office and then working at the crime lab.
So I'll break in here to say, Kathy has this amazing background, this neighborhood that's kind of influencing her as she goes into college, comes out of college. And then, as I kind of mentioned in the intro, there's a very popular TV show that's about crime scene investigation. I think they have like 19 versions of it that I'm sure we've all seen. And there's a certain character on there that, you know, we won't name because we don't want to get in trouble. But Kathy not only looks exactly like this person, or they exactly look like Kathy, same job, same kind of lab technician. You know, we'll let you guys figure out that. But talk to me about, so you start to get into this kind of photography, and then photography of gang members following around the police. The police are giving you access to this wide range of things. And then that sparks this love for the criminal justice system and crime scene investigation, or is it, it's something different because you become a crime scene investigator, right?
Yeah. I guess my love was sparked while I was just documenting, you know, the police and their interactions with the gang members and the drug dealers. And I wanted to show normal people stuff that you don't see going on in the middle of the night,
right,
and that you can't safely interact with. And a lot of people don't want to see it, don't want to know about it. And we really need to know about this whole underbelly and how these kids get here. A lot of them are just lost. You know, a lot of them are inner city kids. For whatever reason, they might be drug addicts or just trying to survive.
Yeah.
There's always mitigating circumstances. And so that story behind it also fascinated me. And then, of course, doing crime scenes, you're there for the victim to figure out what happened to them and
right,
help them. And so the whole thing is just one giant puzzle. And it was amazing to be a part of probably the worst thing that's ever happened in their lives. And you're there to make it better.
You become a crime scene investigator for how long?
I worked for the crime lab for 6 3/4 service years. During that time period, I processed over 6,000 crime scenes. That's an average of 6 to 12 a day. My unit of 95 people were processing around 200 crime scenes every 24 hours.
Wow.
That's 15% of what the police officers responded to. I've been to approximately 4 triple homicides, 3 quadruple homicides, over 200 single and double homicides.
Wow.
And 6,000 crime scenes, give or take, total.
How did you kind of pivot out of that?
You know that old interview question, what do you think you'll be doing in 5 years?
Sure.
Well, I told the police department, I answered, I'll either stay here for the rest of my life, or at 5 years, I'll probably be ready to go. And sure enough, at 5 years, I was starting to transition into analytical upstairs, you know, in the lab, processing firearms and whatnot. And I wasn't in the field as much. And I didn't enjoy that quite as much. I liked being in the field. Mm. I joke going 100 miles an hour with my hair on fire. And, you know, interacting with the people and meeting all these people and,
yeah,
and really helping them. So as I was starting to transition away from that, I also started to realize each scene I went to was starting to take a little piece of my heart with me, because I
yeah,
really, truly did care about each and every one of the crime scenes I went to and the families that impacted and the neighborhood and whatnot. And after a while, it does start to get to you. I could drive around and point out every scene I'd ever been to, that they all stuck with me.
Yeah, I can only imagine. And well, number one, thank you for your service. I think that's fantastic that you're out there. And you think of all the unsung people besides, you know, the TV shows that glamorize it and aren't showing what really happens, or the forensic files that people watch at 2 a.m. on the cable channels, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Of all those people who are actually doing that work behind the scenes. So, and at that same time, you started to think, great, there's other things I want to do in my life. And if I flash back to kind of the creative art photography side, were you starting to build these collections and did that? Gosh, did you have puppies and rainbows at home because your work was so dark? Like, what was kind of the divide between maybe your creative way you were decorating where you live and then this like heavy, heavy job out helping people?
I think I fall into the category that the police tend to call, if I remember the term correctly, ghoulies, that they would call us ghoulies. And I've always been attracted to the darker side of things. Sure. Clive Barker,
right?
Wonderful artist, wonderful writer. I've been to several of his shows and book signings. Joel Peter Witkin. I've just always really been attracted to that. Yeah. My father and I, Halloween was our thing when I was like 4 years old. We were the scariest house on the street and kids would run past it. He was a chemist out of UT. Go Horns! And
awesome.
He would, you know, have bubbling cauldrons and that and the nuns. They were also scared of the nuns. We walked up to their house and knocked on the door. Trick or treat. They threw open the door. Trick! Squirted us with squirt guns.
The nuns did the nuns. When you would trick or treat at the nuns' house?
Yeah. Nuns in Houston are tough.
That's really good. I think you and I have that shared love of my wife and I have a huge Halloween party every year that's scary, that people in my office are texting other people in my office this year and we're like, is it really that scary? Like, and you know, our office manager said, yeah, it is. Like, you need to wear a costume and be prepared. And so, you know, probably half my office doesn't show up. And I'm like, you could just come talk to me, right? We'll put a, you know, a pin on your jacket and say, leave this person alone. But very similar. Always had a really great time at Halloween with my family and my friends. Always remember it.
Yeah. There's definitely the people that can handle it.
Right.
I jokingly call myself the keeper of the dead. As you know, I have a lot of dead things in my house.
Yeah.
We have a cabinet of death and the collections of taxidermy. That's one of my hobbies. Also, doing European mounts, boiling down the bones. At my new house, I keep finding bones out in the forest. So that's really cool. I have this kind of history of the house and the creatures that have lived and died in our forest.
And so let's get into that, right? So you, at some point, moved to Austin, Texas. Did you move into this house, the Riggins house, which we'll get to in a moment? Was that the first place you lived in Austin, or did you live somewhere else?
It was a little bit of a transition in Austin.
Sure.
I'm originally from Texas. My family's lived here since Mexico and in Austin for over 100 years. My uncle is the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Texas. Mm-hmm. We have deep, deep roots here. So it made sense to come back to Texas.
Yeah.
But we just loved Austin so much. We knew that was the place for us because, you know, it's Austin.
Yeah.
It's a little bit for everybody and just its own unique culture. So we lived in a condo for about a week and then had to move because chain smoker and drama there.
Oh,
and so then we moved up into a rental house in North Austin. And crazy, it follows me, I'm telling you. We're in this house, and I'm thinking, okay, I don't work for the police anymore. It's safe. I can watch the news. It's not going to be an issue. Because when I first started at the police department, I quit watching the news because they're always getting it wrong, or I just didn't want to relive it or whatever.
Sure.
And then after about 6 months, I turned on the news, and it was 9/11. And so I called in, are we working today? Yeah, yeah, come on in. Well, by the time I got there, it was evacuated. And so they said, well, obviously we're next to the federal building. We're evacuated. There's the missing LA flight. Everybody's going home. But I got sent to the airport.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so I called my mom and it's like, oh, reality check. I'm a first responder. I'm going to the airport.
Yeah.
And so after that, you know, that's all, you know, ancient history now, but it's still in the back of our minds always. And you know, all the souls lost and the people working there. But all these years later, we moved to Austin, and I'm thinking, hey, I don't work for the police. I can watch the news.
Sure.
Turn it on. A plane's crashed into the Exelon building. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, here we go again.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, ooh, but I can go and take pictures. I'm a civilian. And so I grab my camera, and I'm getting ready to rush down there and take pictures and be annoying to the police like all the pedestrians that are, you know, watching and whatnot. And next thing you know, there's a knock on the door, and it's the FBI. And I was like, ooh, come here, kitty, 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 come on in. And so
not how most people react to the FBI being at their door.
Yeah. So these two agents come in. They're from the anti-terrorist unit.
Wow.
Turns out the guy who owned the plane that crashed into the building lived in our house before us.
Oh, wow.
Follows me. It follows me. And so the FBI agents are talking to me. Did you know him?
Right.
Blah, blah, blah. And they're looking around my house. And you know how my house looks.
Yes.
And they're like, grenades and what's those squiggly things on the vases? And I carefully, actually gleefully explained that there were deadly viruses on these drinking glasses that we have that a friend in Detroit made. And so they're looking around and finally just said, who are you? So I had to go into the whole story all over again.
You're listening to the Weird Homes Podcast. You can learn more at weirdhomestour.com, on Instagram, Weird Homes Tour, on Facebook, Weird Homes Tour, and on Twitter, Weird Homes Tour as well. This episode of the Weird Homes Podcast, powered by Native Solar. As a customer, I know that Native Solar's experts will design and install energy-producing solar panels that will decrease your electricity bills. Trust me, over the last 4 years, I've seen my electricity bill go down and down and down, and I love it. Take your power back. Visit nativesolar.com. Running the Weird Homes Tour, Kathy reached out to us. We had a great talk with her and her partner about their home, and we're looking up this address, and we're like, holy crap, this, you know, quote-unquote weird home is two blocks from our home where we live in the University Hills neighborhood of Austin, Texas. And so we drove by, and we saw this little sign in the window that said Riggins and a number, and not being Friday Night Lights people. We had no idea what that meant. And we started saying, first of all, what an amazing coincidence that this house is so close to us. And they throw an amazing Halloween party. We throw an amazing Halloween party. But we said, this house doesn't look that weird from the outside. I mean, the colors are super interesting. So, you know, little did we know going in the first time what an amazing cabinet of curiosities the inside of your house is. So, tell us what that little sign, tell us the significance of the Riggins house, and then, you know, maybe walk us through what the inside of that house looked like. Okay. I know everyone wants to hear that.
That was crazy, too, that we just saw this beautiful, kind of beat up mid-century house in this cute neighborhood, and we wanted it. So, we went ahead and bought it, and about 2 weeks later, after moving in, I'm walking down to the mailbox, and this car slows down. And I'm thinking, that's weird. And then they turn around and they come back, and I'm thinking, they're going to shoot me. LA drive-bys. So I immediately think I'm going to get shot. As they pull up, they start taking pictures of the house. And we thought, that's really weird. And our real estate agent was also a very good friend of ours. So we mentioned to her, and she's like, yeah, they used to film in your neighborhood. So we started researching, and it turned out that our house was the filming location for Tim Riggins' home, where he lived with his brother, Billy, for the TV show Friday Night Lights.
That's right.
And it was in every single episode except for three for 5 years. And even though the show still has been canceled, what, 7-8 years now? Tourists still come by every day.
And I can personally verify that even though Kathy and her partner do not live there anymore, people still come by to take photos of this house.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And you know, you told me a really interesting story about some plants that might have grown in the house while it was there. Can you share that story as well?
Yes, because I did report it to the police.
Yeah, that's right.
Apparently, the filming crew liked to take smoke breaks on the corner of the house on the side, and apparently some seeds fell, and they landed where a bush had been cut out, and so they managed to wedge down inside the trunk of the bush, and marijuana was growing. And I found out by accident when my nephew, I was doing surveillance, working as a private investigator at the time, and my nephew sends me a text, Aunt Kathy, that's a really nice, healthy marijuana plant. And of course, I flipped all caps. What? You see the headline now?
Yeah.
Former LAPD crime lab arrested for growing marijuana. And so I immediately took a picture, showed it to APD, and they're like, oh, yeah, just tear it out, throw it away. And then he paused, and he's all, how many plants are there? Well, I'm not stupid. Three or more is hazmat situation. So I'm all one. And we proceeded to tear it out. When it'd get to be 5 feet tall, we'd tear out the plant, throw it away. Those garbage men loved us. It actually took a year for us to finally kill off the marijuana to keep it from growing back.
Wow, like a weed on the side of the house.
Totally.
Thanks to some craft services person who left it over there.
We always found crazy things in that house. They literally stopped filming 3 weeks before we bought the house.
Wow.
Yeah. And the show was still on the air for another 6 months.
And there are literally tour buses that here in Austin, Texas, do Friday Night Lights tours that go by the house and stop and still take photos. We happen to know the new owner as well through another friend, and they've had to actually put the little sign back up in the window with the his jersey number and all that stuff. But besides it being this classic, now almost iconic filming location for this TV show, take us inside of the house. Like, walk me through some of your collections and talk to me about, why you had that particular thing. Because I think what we want to discover in this and learn from people like you is how people listening can be more creative in their homes, right? They can go and see this, listen to this, and go home and do something different, right? Paint a wall purple or collect Victorian coffins in a corner, whatever it might be. But talk to us about your home and, especially maybe the inspiration behind some of that stuff.
Okay. Our main inspiration would probably be local artists and fellow artists and their creativity and their paintings. Cool. And also medical devices. I love medical devices. Kind of a hangover from my training days at the county coroner's office where I was a body snatcher. When you first walked into our house, you were greeted right above the doorway in the foyer was the roof of a squad car, and there was a light switch on the wall, and when you'd flip it, the lights and the siren would still work, and that siren would, the whole neighborhood would hear it. It was so loud. And then we had the cabinet of death right there on the side, which was this little brown cabinet full of bones and different animals that we had found at different houses and whatnot, kind of a whole history of the critters that have died at our various houses that we found, and we just wanted to respect how amazing and beautiful their bones and bodies are and whatnot. I'm trying to think what else we had. We had the creepy guy, as my 3-year-old niece calls it. That's this mannequin who's wearing one of my old bodysuits from doing hazmat situations, and he's wearing a gas mask and my old coroner jacket, and he was standing in the foyer greeting people. The coffee table was a Victorian coffin dolly with mid-century to turn-of-the-century gynecological equipment in it. And it'd be funny to watch people's faces as they'd start to recognize the speculum and start to recognize the dilator. And then they'd say, "Is that?" And I'd laugh and say, "Yes." And then they just kind of go in the other room.
Are you always collecting? Are you going to eBay, or are you buying everything, as you said, from local people? Like, how do you find this stuff to put in your house?
Everything. You definitely always look. You go on eBay, you go on Etsy, you go to local craft shows in your own backyard, finding things, and go to the park, and you can, sticks and leaves can make amazing, creepy things, or there's always so much beauty in everything. You just have to be willing to stop and see it and recognize it. And we just find inspiration in everything and love bringing, a big thing of mine is bringing kids in. That I used to be part of the youth advocate program working with at-risk youth. And so we got involved with a couple day camps, a completely different program, but it kind of a natural evolution to get involved with other programs with kids. And we'd actually bring them to the house and show them all the bones and show them the different equipment and the artwork and inspire them. And that's a big thing I think all artists want to do, is express feelings and emotions and stir feelings and emotions in other people and just create everything. There's, it's so unlimited what you can do.
I think so many people, though, don't have that mindset. Maybe they have that mindset of like, gosh, I'm trying to resell this place in 5 years, and so I just want it to have, a gray wall and things like that. What's some, practical advice for those people who want to go home and do something different in their house? Is there a certain area to start, or does it have to, come from within, and they have to, go out in the desert and meditate and think about it? Like, how would they get started?
I think it's very individual. Just whatever's in your brain and in your heart and how you're going to find your way to express. Maybe it's just taking a walk around the neighborhood, going to a park. It's really hard to say what's going to be your inspiration. We find ours just all the time. My brain is always looking at stuff and thinking, wow, the design of that and the lighting and kind of my art photo background. Earlier you asked about the development of the house. We were there 7 years and building on it the entire time and moving doors and finding old doors and connecting them together to build that giant barn door for the bedroom. And it just constantly evolves and changing the paint and changing the lighting. Just change a light bulb. You want to change your perspective in your house? Change the light bulb. That will tremendously give a different impact. The warmth, the cold, the shades. Everything is design and art.
You've worked on this house for 7 years. You guys decided at some point, gosh, we'd like a little more land. We'd like to have a little more room. And so you guys sell this house. How does that even work? How do you package all of that up? Does it come with you? Does it get sold off at some amazing auction that I missed that I should have been at bidding on things?
I mean, you messaged me asking.
Of course, I was all about it. How did that kind of unfold?
So far, both times we've had to sell our, or not had to, chose to sell our houses and move to a new house, the real estate agents very carefully tiptoed around the idea of what we own and what our house looks like and pleaded with us to get storage units. And we'd have to strip everything out of the house and kind of paint the colors back to normal. And it's a real cleansing process because we love our houses. Every house we've bought has been a fixer-upper because it had good bones. And we wanted to make it ours and restore it to its glory and just make these old houses beautiful again. And then, of course, a little crazy on the inside. And so as we're moving our stuff out, all of our collections and our medical equipment and the surgical table and the gurney and the creepy man, as we're moving all those out, it definitely prepares our hearts and brains for the new house. And as we normal the house back down to not being a weird house anymore, it's a real cleansing process and does actually make us ready to start on a new house, which is, you know, our love. Now we have this farmhouse that we're fixing up and the property and the goats and the chickens and blue eggs. We have blue eggs.
You know, it's interesting because I think you and I and a lot of the community around our tour, the people who go on the tour, right, the people who grab the book and hopefully are listening to this podcast, they dig weird, right? They think it's cool and interesting and above and beyond normal. But I would love to hear, like, how do you define weird? What's your definition?
That's a very loaded question because to me, weird is normal and normal is weird. Mm. Austin is so amazing because there's something for everybody. And it is this weird little town that no matter what you like, there's something for you.
Yeah.
My idea of weird definitely is the reverse of what most people think. And I think most of the people on the Weird Homes Tour are that way too, that we're all just eccentric artists and have our loves and our passions. And that's really typical of artists. That I actually read a study once about how artists' brains, going back into forensics, artists' brains don't register information the same way as considered a normal person, that we see and interpret information differently. And maybe that has a little bit to do with it. I also read a study that goes all the way back to the 60s about artists and schizophrenia and how the artists get all the good parts and schizophrenics, nothing against them. Some of them, I have friends that are schizophrenic,
sure.
But those are very hand in hand.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting. A lot of my artist friends, you know, do deal with mental health issues. It's very prevalent in the artist community. And it just makes for really interesting people.
No, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I think there's that historical look at art, outsider art. I mean, just everything that kind of comes in and mixes with other types of art and what people think is normal is weird, is back to normal, is back to weird. And what we think is like outsider art in the 1970s, we're like not shocked by it at all. You know, now in 2018 or whatever that might be, right? And
absolutely,
people get like accustomed over time to the craziest things imaginable, right? And then artist's job is to be like, great, I need to push that more, right? I need to push that button even more. And I think that's what's super interesting on our home tour and in Austin and all these other places where we have these artists is like, you've built your own museum.
That's true.
You've built your own beautiful, interesting museum to you. And it's the most private, personal stuff you could ever collect and put around you. And every single piece has a meaning and where you bought it and why. And to your point, clearing that all out It's just like an amazing cleansing process.
Absolutely.
Emotionally, physically, spiritually, whatever you believe. You know, I think that's true for so many of us. It's just we're not doing it for our entire house, right? Tell me about the new place. And like you said, did it have good bones? What does that look like?
Again, back to our amazing real estate agent. Hi, Shannon. had to. She knew we wanted to get a place. We wanted land, minimum 5 acres. And who can afford that in Austin?
Nobody.
We are not that wealthy. And that's kind of the point of the Weird Homes Tour, too. Not only bringing all this inspiration and art, but reminding people that artists can't afford to live here anymore. Yeah. Musicians can't afford to live here anymore. Working people can't afford to live here anymore. And it's crazy that I'm seeing LA. And that's really sad because Texas is my heart. It's my home. My family's always been here. Shannon helped us find this new house. We wanted a little granny shack for my mom to live in because she was getting older. And we didn't want her down in Houston with all the hurricanes anymore. My sister's house took 18 minutes to tear down after Hurricane Ike. Oh, gosh. And we wanted her out of that. That way she could go down and visit, come up and visit us, go to San Antonio, visit, wherever she wanted. Yeah. And so we had a place where she could come up and visit when she wants. And so we found this house. It's based on Anna Green Gables, which I had never seen. And cute show, watched it a couple of times. It's this beautiful, big, white, normal farmhouse.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, when you walk inside, all of a sudden you see a coffin dolly and a gurney and a surgical table and hundreds of dead bones. And I just finished painting yesterday on my chicken coop a sign that says, "Chickens, the pet that poops breakfast." So we're putting our touch on the house.
So you've been able to take a lot of that stuff and have maybe even a bigger canvas for it with more rooms. And like you said, this kind of Anne of Green Gables farmhouse that you can spread out in. Is that
absolutely
right?
Absolutely.
That's great. What's the next project? You just finished the chicken coop. What's the next interesting artistic thing you're doing with the house?
We definitely want to start doing some remodeling. That we want to gut the plain white cabinets in the bathroom and do reclaimed wood with barn door instead of do open cabinets and shelving on the wall and then have a barn door with the mirrors on it that slides back and forth. That's kind of the most traditional thing that'd probably be in the house. But Miriam does a lot of woodworking and she welds and she's an amazing artist in her own right with hands-on design, furniture design and whatnot. And so, she wants to do concrete countertops, of course.
Of course.
Because you know we have concrete countertops and tons of things made out of concrete. She's a brilliant concrete artist. Then we also, we have 8 acres and there's a little bit of a forest line through the back. So I've been mowing trails through the trees and I'm going to do a haunted house camp out party next year. And then we're also going to set up, you know, I always have to come back to Halloween. It's my heart.
Of course.
And so next year, we have no trick-or-treaters. We went from 300 to zero. And so I'm in a little shock. I'm going to do haunted trails, and then we're going to set up for the local kids to come out because they don't have any real big place to go to and whatnot. So I want to do a lot of building for that. We're also we're enclosing our corral because we're going to breed our goats and start making our own goat cheese. And I can't wait to get my garden going back because we want to be more sustainable.
Yeah.
You know, I don't believe in lawns. And here I have my front yard is a little over an acre and it's all green grass.
Okay.
No.
Get rid of that.
Oh, an orchard's going in.
I love it.
And then people can come and, you know, we believe in community. And so that'll be huge.
That's awesome. And what a great way, again, you know, to take it back to Halloween just for a hot second. Is
always
to Kathy's point, she had 300 people and the most intricately designed front yard with a maze and mannequins and props and just pure Halloween insanity that people loved and lights and fog and, you know, neighborhood kids just losing their minds. Nothing, you know, it was not my spider on a plate haunted house when I was 8 years old. This was the full on adult version, but tweaked so kids wouldn't lose their minds too much. And they loved it, and adults loved it. So it'll be awesome to see that come back for the people where you live now and the different version of that. And you know,
exactly.
I can't wait to go out there and see that. And then, you know, I think of like Richard Garriott building his haunted houses in the 90s, right?
And
the early 2000s. And I think all of us out there who are super into Halloween and, you know, building our own little haunted houses, aspire to that, right?
Definitely.
And that's an inspiration. That's a whole other podcast, I'm sure, on Halloween and haunted houses. Kathy, I just want to say thank you so much for your time today. Also, I know you've kind of written a book about a lot of your experiences in LAPD and crime scene and forensic and, again, just everything you saw. Tell us a little bit about the book and the name of it, and then, of course, you know, where people can go and get the book.
Oh, awesome. Thank you. It's called Life in the Trenches, and there's two versions. Life in the Trenches, a retrospective, which has, it's a full-color book, and it has my photography in the back, not crime scene photos. I always emphasize that. It's my personal photography, and some of it is from the police department, doing my senior thesis with them, but not crime scene photos, because those are considered evidence. And so I wouldn't be able to do that and keep them. And then there's the blue version, which is just my stories, and it's called Life in the Trenches, My Stories. And it's just a more economical version because I was naive and didn't realize how much money goes into full color. And so I wanted everybody to be able to afford the book. It's currently available on Amazon. The full color red version is currently, I believe, $35. And the blue one is $20, which I would have loved it at half price for both of those. But printing costs is crazy.
Yes, we are well aware of that at the Weird Homes Tours. We go out and put our stories into books and things like that, too.
Yeah, the Home Tours book is amazing.
Thank you very much. And I do love that you have the red pill version and the blue pill version of your books. I'm sure someone's pointed that out to you before. But thank you so much for today. We can't wait to see the new house when it's ready and come out there. And, you know, we'll work on the outside of Austin rural
yes.
Weird Homes Tour, which I know you will be the general or commander of, I'm
sure. Oh, please. You know I'm in.
Thank you for your time today. We appreciate
it. Thank you.
It.
Always a pleasure.
We'd love for you today to go check out our website at weirdhomestour.com. You can find the new coffee table book that features all the homes that you're hearing about on the podcast. We'd also love for you to check out our Instagram, Weird Homes Tour. And finally, really, we want this podcast to inspire you to show that design has no boundaries and that we would rather have neighbors be strange than be strangers.
Native Solar's energy experts will design and install energy-producing, money-saving solar panels on your home or business that will decrease your electricity bills while increasing the value of your property and the quality of your life. Take your power back at nativesolar.com.